And before we start, let's make sure that everyone has the relevant documentation for the meeting. That is a presentation, two documents, and the September program and the minutes of the 13th June 2017. After our last engagement with Dr. Zegna, I think the management were posing questions and comments. They felt that they are not well understood and requested that they be given the opportunity to clarify themselves, but to listen if there's anything new from what they're going to say, so that we have a better understanding. And some of us are still novice in this area. We're still learning, but you can't be learning forever and ever. There must come a time when we have a better understanding of the issues of ICT. And South Africa has a vibrant internet management regime consisting of a secure and stable ZetNet domain and space with a little more than 1 million registered names. However, the number of ZetNet domain names is extremely limited considering the total population in South Africa, that's 54 million. And the National Integrated ICT White Paper has alerted one of the challenges as the limited regulation in the domain name space. No single entity, therefore, is mandated to address issues related to the national government internet space. And the ICT white paper further highlighted that given the different policy imperatives and objectives driving audiovisual content regulation and ICT regulation of networks and electronic communication services, and the need for holistic regulation across the internet value chain, including domain space, of course. The white paper proposes a new economic regulator of ICTs be established. The new regulator will incorporate the functions of Dr. Zetna and other functions with the existing regulator. It is therefore important for us to make sure that we do understand what is going on with Dr. Zetna, but we are aware of the fact that other members are far ahead in terms of understanding the environment, but we learn from each other. And with that brief remark, I'll just hand over to Dr. Zetna. But before we start presenting, the secretary will read to us the apologies that we have for today's meeting.
Good morning, members. The apologies are Mr. McKenzie, the minister, and the deputy minister. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, let's hand over to the presenter. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Good morning to you and to committee members. Just for reminder, I'm Vigan Pisane from the Tanzania Domain Name Authority. I'm with Peter Madam, who's the operations manager at .zetna. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to talk about what ZetNA is about, and probably I think the key thing also in talking about what ZetNA is about was explaining the law. It's also to give a background to how we came to be where we are now. Because I know that in the last, we noticed the trend of questioning in the last three APP presentations to this portfolio committee in the last 3 years, that there were issues arising about what ZetNA is about, is supposed to do and not to do, and why have ZetNA done certain things. So we thought this presentation should therefore give both a view of what the Act says we should do, and then also how we came to where we are, especially with regard to a question that arises from time to time, the central registry model, or what we call the ZA central registry. I'm looking at the presentation that was, we sent two presentations, and time allowing, we may capture the second one, but it's more for information purposes and how the internet domain system works. But the first one we're looking at is the one entitled .ZA and .ZetNA history. So that's the one we are looking at. First, the ECT Act chapter X or chapter 10, if you want to call it so, lists out in section 65 problem from section 59 all the way to section 69 is about Zedner. The particular functions of Zedner are listed in section 65, which says that Zedner 65.1, which says that Zedner must manage and administer the .za namespace. Zedner must license our registries and registrars. We'll have a lot to say here about this as we go on the issue of licensing. The simple fact being that as much as they say that we must license registers and registrars, the reality and the truth is that we've never licensed anybody to date. And we'll have reasons for that. The Act requires us to comply with international best practices in administering the namespace, which is one of the reasons why we keep on benchmarking or we attend different fora, we engage with different exercises and projects so that we learn how best to continue improving the namespace. We are also required to publish relevant policy guidelines. Again, that we'll have something to say there because a guideline is a guideline. It's typically nothing that is compulsive. But with the assistance of the industry, we have played a role of developing policy that with the consent of the ISP industry has become sort of binding and people adhere to it. And that was because it was in the interest of all the practitioners in the value chain. The Act requires us to create public awareness regarding economic and commercial benefits of the domain name system and of .za in particular. We also are required to conduct investigation, research, and surveys, obviously for the betterment of the namespace, and to provide advice to the minister. In the Act, it still says communications, but we all know now that the presidential proclamation of, I think, 2014 made clear that it's now the Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services that we provide advice to. It's important to say that there is Section 64, when it comes to licensing, that speaks of Zedner licensing registries and registers according to prescribed terms and conditions. And the Act goes on to say anything prescribed in the Act means the regulation by the minister. Section 65 also has a maze where it says Zedner may conduct necessary investigations, publish .za domain name registration and information. It also says Zedner must, when requested to do so, make policy recommendations to the minister. And then there's Section 68 as well. Though we didn't touch here, probably I can touch on Section 67 if you read that particular chapter. I think Section 67 has to do with our funds and how we are funded. And it makes it clear that, we ought not to receive money from government, but we must receive money from elsewhere. And one must admit that then it's by conclusion of the industry players that that money comes from domain name registration, registrations. But the Act itself doesn't say so specifically. You know, so we have had to do a number of things through consent and cooperation with industry players. Why? Because the feeling among them has been that we need a more active Zedner so that there's justice in how people are treated or the players are treated in the value chain. Section 67 therefore speaks about the fact that we must submit to the minister our income and expenditure statement for approval. Which we do, of course, we do more than that. We submit that together with the APP and with our strategic plan, and that finds its way also here. That section also goes on to say if we do any changes to our business plan, to our budget, again, we need the ministerial consent for that. And it's an important section to just cite because it is on the basis of that section in particular that we are not a Schedule 3A public entity. We are not a PFMA entity. There was a time when I joined, the board was still trying to thresh out the status of Zedner with the National Treasury, who looked at this Act and particular Section 67 and in terms of revenue generation or source of funding, rather. And then they said, no, you don't qualify because you don't receive public funds. There's another spin to that, of course, is that in the earlier sections of Chapter X, I think it's Section 61 or so, it says that Zedner Zedner has members. Any South African citizen who cares must apply and become a member. And those were all the realities that made the National Treasury to say, no, 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 you are not a public PFMA entity. You are not a Schedule 3A entity. And that triggered. I think from the department, at least I'm happy that Professor Libose is here because she has a good memory of those particular incidences and the guys from shareholder like Gnosis of how we came about that. Section 68 entitles us to promulgate wide-ranging dominium regulations subject to the minister's approval, you know, so those are regulations that, you know, cover different areas. It's important to say, as I said, I will come to the issue of licensing, that to say that we were enlightened in 2010-11 by the state law advisor, not once but twice, to understand the fact that those regulations that we may promulgate in Section 68 are really secondary regulations, not primary. Well, the point being that we would only promulgate those regulations once the minister has promulgated the primary licensing regulations. And then Section 69 of the Act speaks about the alternative dispute resolution regulations. It requires the minister to develop those, to publish those regulations and make them effective. That was done in 2006 when I joined the department and the ZENA directors were in the process of wrapping that up. The regulations became effective in 2007, and they are the ones that are helping us to resolve disputes over domain names. Now, a bit of history. Sorry, my throat for some reason is not there with me. It should clear up. The history of DOTZA is that DOTZA was delegated by a man called John Postel. It's late now. He was an academic. I think he was in Southern California University. He was the one who was playing the role of what we call today ICANN. He was the one who, through this particular project that they were running, coming from the military in the U.S., was assigned the task of adding top-level domains to the Internet root zone. That function later developed to what we call IANA, which is a contract that ICANN has now with the United States government. IANA standing for Internet Assigned Names Numbers Authority. So he is the one who delegated DOTZA to the UNINET guys who were based in the Rhodes University, with Mr. Mike Lowry being the one who was the lead person in the administrator of DOTZA. When Mike Lowry launched DOTZA when it was delegated, and it's important we use that word delegated, you can also probably say assigned. You know, when under the UNINET project, he was delegated DOTZA. He then chose a second level structure for DOTZA. From some of the recollection and discussions I've had with him, because he's still an active ZENA member, that decision was made after looking at how other countries were running their namespaces. They looked at the UK, they looked at the AU, they looked at France and so forth, and felt that we rather should have people register names at the third level, so that when you register parliament under gov.za, parliament.gov.za, you don't have parliament.za. So he chose that particular second-level structure and determined that co.za would be primarily for commercial, gov.za for government and its entities, and the list goes on and so forth, ac.za for academic and research institutions. That's the structure that he chose and that we inherited. When ZENA was established, he didn't choose the flat structure, what you call a flat structure, that Germany or Deutschland.de use, where you just register parliament.de and that's it. Now, in terms of the history, some may know that there was substantial push and pull at the time when the ECT Act was still a bill. With regard to this section of the domain names. From what I've been told by different players, is that Chapter S of the ECT Act entered the bill fairly late at an advanced stage after some convergence of minds between the then Department of Communications and the industry on how DOTZA should be run. Now, that compromise obviously provides what Chapter X says, that a separate entity must be established by government, but it must be members and so forth. Before that, there had been an attempt to establish an industry body called namespace.za, and that was the Tamil government said, no, we must have a proper arrangement and accountability and set and establish a totally new entity for this. The next slide, or that now was established in 2003, once the City Act was assented to by the President in understanding either late 2002 or early 2003, I'm not sure, I was not in the space then. The Minister of Communications then had to appoint a board, members of the board. We're now on slide eight.
Slide eight.
Oh, it's not numbered. Oh, sorry. You don't have this slide? I know I sent it fairly long. Really? No. There should be two. We are on that one. But I think the chair has.
Yeah, all the copy.
Okay, so that would be, let's say they are not numbered.
Are you certain?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but it's important for us to have a numbered document so we can follow.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for that inconvenience. We're on the slide now that starts with established in 2003. The point is that the Act itself is the one that says how many board members should be appointed, and the Minister then accordingly has to implement it. The Act also says clearly in this particular section that deals with the appointment of board members, the process that the Minister must undertake, one, he must set up a nominating committee, a selection committee, sorry, who must then, with the department, send out a call for applications or invitation to apply for interested parties, shortlist, do interviews, and then come to the minister and recommend the nine board members. And then the minister is the one who then determines who should be the chair among the nine. And I think that's important because I know it's been a bit of a thorny question from time to time to say, why is it that you have such a big board when probably a fair question also when we were three or four at the time, you know, and, but that's the reality that was there. And so the establishment of Zedna, I made that at this point. I think the key point when the board was established in 2003, you could imagine there were issues that the board, I think it was late 2003, they became functional in 2004. One of the first deliverables that took place was the redelegation of .za. By this we meant now the authority of .za was then moved. Because now this was supported by the industry. Uninet and Mike Lowry handed over .za to Zedna, and the Department of Communications notified ICANN, and the proper changes were made to say from then onwards, Zedna is the authority for .za. I'm repeating the same point here. 1994. So I'll skip this. This is too much history. I think some of it I've covered already. So can we just flow with me as I guess, skip the slides? Yes. Yes. I'm on the one that says then establishment 2004. The first board meeting that took place was on 9 February 2004. At the time, there was no funding. The ECTX said that the Department of Communication should give some funding to Zedna, but not permanently. It was really more in terms of seed funding, you know, to say start up and run, but sort yourself out and get funding elsewhere. And that funding only, from what I was told, was at this time I had not joined Zedna. Zedna only joined in the beginning of April 2006. They did not have any funding from government until in 2005, and they at the time, though the board continued to meet, which is something that fairly some of the committee members have pointed out before in terms of people who have contributed and made sacrifices to the growth of Zedna. That board held several meetings where the activities of the board were funded from one person. Of course, the department, I think as far as I know, it was refunded, it was reimbursed for that. But they didn't want to be hamstrung by the issues of funding. So somebody was contributing for the board activities when they made telephone calls and so forth. And it's important to say also that until they received funding, directors were not paid. They were really just contributing to the industry. And that meant staff could not be employed by that time until the funding was received. And as a result of that, some of the directors became very operationally involved until 2006 when I was employed. The board between 2003 was a proportional type of a board, industry geeks, four white guys, and three black females, one black man, and there was a chair, and then there was a representative of the DOC back then was observing the board meetings, especially active until 2007. And then in 2007, the tenure of the first board ended, and then there were changes in the board. Not everybody was changed. There were some directors who did not return, but there was a substantial, I think probably five of them still continued, had their tenures renewed. And that was meant to be 3 to 4 year type of appointment, but as it happened, again, there were no changes to the board come 2010-11. For various reasons, and they were asked, all the directors were asked to continue serving as directors until the minister then appointed the new board, which eventually happened in 2015. Now, when Zedna started its work in 2004, before this appointment of staff and received the delegation of .ZA, the inevitable result was that the board would not be able to run or operate the zone file itself. Of course, it's not a very active exercise. The zone file is the root file that says this is .ZA on the internet. And without it, whatever falls under .ZA, you wouldn't find on the internet. So under this file, it says the CO.ZA, and then all the names under CO.ZA then can be added. So it's not a very active engagement. So the board felt that it needed to be outsourced, and Internet Solutions back then volunteered to manage the zone file on Zedna's behalf for free, and that carried on for many years, I think until 2014, when we were ready to assume the zone file operation. The dynamics on the board was that it was a board of industry veterans, as we saw, and then also novices, and there was those who called novices needed time to understand the domain name business and models very well. I was one of them, by the way. So I had to take time to go through studying the industry and understanding. The reality when I joined was that there was still a guarded attitude between the industry. When I mean industry, the internet service provider community and Zedna. I remember when I stood in my first ever iWeek in 2007 to present about Zedna, that the reception, one must admit, was very cold, you know, and there was a lot of frowning. There was the attitude of government taking our internet, you know, but at the same time, not that all was negative. You could see there were clear questions. People needed to understand what we wanted to do. The fear was that we were going to do something major and probably stupid at the time, but we were able to remove those fears, to show them that, look, we are learning. We are not going to disturb you. We'll take time before we can do anything to the internet. Now, we started consultations. In 2005, the board had run a consultation. There's a document that I still refer to today very, very fondly, because it was probably the most strategic document ever released on how .ZA should operate. And they released that document, and it was called the Dodzele Public Discussion Document. And they asked very key question about how Dodzele in the future should look. Now, there were submissions, not a lot, but from the key players, there were submissions received. And when I started working, I had to start considering those submissions and then making recommendations to the board. But what was clear was that even in the board, they were opposing policy options because some believed that let's collapse this thing. Don't worry about CO.ZA. Just allow Parliament to be Parliament.ZA. You know, don't go for Parliament.gov.ZA. Do like the Germans are doing, or back then the French were doing. You know, or like the generic domains, like your .com, that are not assigned to a country, are doing. You just have Parliament.com, you don't have Parliament.what.com. You know, so that was one of the key things that was there. So we had to continue our work and look at the issue of introducing new second-level domains, because the overall feeling, nevertheless, was that, no, let's keep the structure as it was. Some of the second-level domains that already been delegated before we assumed our operations, like ngo.za, alt.za, net.za, but were not functional. The people to whom these second-level domains were delegated, when ZEDNA was established, felt that they didn't want to launch their second-level domains any further until there was clarity of ZEDNA's policy. The key point here, because I've covered the issue of the dynamics and the board, is the third bullet point, that the board decided to put a moratorium on establishing any new second-level domains pending the completion of ZEDNA's policy and licensing function. That moratorium went on, as some may know, all the way until 2015, and we'll explain later why it was only lifted in 2015. There were dynamics also that we had to face in how we were doing our consultation and involving the industry. The reality was that there was one significant player you could call fairly unfairly a monopoly in the value chain called Uniforum SA. They were running the CO.ZA domain, second-level domain, which was obviously the biggest at the time, still is up to today. I think on its own today accounts for well around 96% of the total registration. I haven't checked in the last month, but close to 1.2 million domains already registered, and CO.ZA accounts for around 96% of it. Now, the reality was that in the forum, they controlled the channel, because most of the ISPs were registering names in CO.ZA. That was the most active name space. Why? Because it's open to everybody. It's also for business, and business were the first ones that tend to be the case to adopt technology, you know. So the majority of the registrations were in CO.ZA. If you spoke to any ISP at the time, internet service provider, all they knew was Uniforum. You know, when we came, we had to introduce ourselves a lot to say, we are ZEDNA and this is who we are. You know, some didn't even know that there was an act of parliament that establishes us and so forth. And one of the key questions would be to say, how are you related to Uniforum? You know, because Uniforum was very much known. We noticed, of course, that Uniforum had its own corporate shortcomings, though, because we engaged them from the beginning as a significant player, the most significant player at this time. But they had its own corporate shortcomings. So they had started like that, not a statutory entity. They started as a members entity, but at some point they stopped the membership, and because of the conflicts between some of its members. And its AGMs were no longer a regular occurrence when I started this particular job and so forth. So those were the dynamics. But the point was Uniforum was the most significant player that we had to try and work with. This is the public discussion document that I referred to. I would like to skip the slide. But some of the key questions that discussion document asked was about the structure of ZA. Such questions was, how should ZA domain name be structured? Subdomain domain name be structured? Should the subdomain structure currently used be maintained? Should we open up for direct second level registrations? There was a key policy question on registry model, which was, who should administer the database of .ZA domains that are registered in second levels? Should the subdomains be administered by a centralized organization or by multiple registries? We call them those database administrators or registries. The reason being, and why this puts us, was that there were, when ZEDNA was established, 27 second-level domains, some very small, some even private. And the question was, if we are to license these guys, do we really want to license all of these guys? You know, there was, for example, Olivetti.za was assigned to a company. Do we really want to license that or want to have exemptions for that? Should we not have a centralized platform where these second level domains are operated? So those were the questions. The third one was on registrar model. And it was asking who should be licensed to access the .za, the database of .za domains. What should license conditions be and so forth. And then there was a key question about the second level domain policy, about who should determine it and so forth, which of course eventually by industry consent became said. Now the key outcomes of that consultation process was that people supported that we should continue the second level domain structure and reopen some of the SLTs that were at the time, and call them stale if you want, but not necessarily stale because there's some few registrations there. Those were SLTs like .net.za, web.za and so forth. There was substantial support for a centralized central registry operations, centralized registry operations. And the thinking from the ISP community, especially ISPA, being that when their ISPs were registered, the ISP member ISPs were registering names, they needed to configure their systems this way to deal with .co.za and reconfigure their systems that way to deal with .org.za. And reconfigure the system again this way to deal with AC.za. So they were saying, it's killing business. Why doesn't Zedna go for a model where they can make the registration platform to be centralized? So that was that had substantial support, I would say. I wouldn't say as well, by the way, it was overwhelming, but it was, I think, the way we measured back then, well around 65% of the respondents were saying this. Centralized the register operation. Some even helped us, were even proposing that centralized register operations for the following second level domains, and they will list them, SOTOZA, NETZA, and so forth. Then you can exclude the ones dedicated to specific entities, like gov.za, because nobody can register gov.za unless it's government, department, or entity. So that was the outcome from there. There was also support that we should allow resellers and not license them, but obviously resellers can, ISPs that don't want to be licensed, but will register names through a licensed ISP. And then on the policies, Edna was supported to determine policy and allow for both open and closed SLTs. And the key point here, like I said earlier on, that the Act says we develop and publish policy guidelines. But this particular consultation, there was a firm view and request by the industry to say, comparing to other countries, we should be the policy body for the new space. So accordingly, we'll require Zedna to develop policy. And for us to tread on the thin line carefully, that's why we use this extensive consultation model, especially with the ISPP, to make sure that whatever we do is supported. We have a second level domain delegation policy. We also have some of the policies that came through in the last 3-4 years, like the general policy, which set us principles for that underpin the registration of names in .za, which was well supported by the industry and is being implemented even now as we speak. The next slide of 2006, institutionalization of .za, that was when the general manager was appointed, that being myself, to establish the organizational machinery and develop internal controls and so forth. We started participating actively in the domain name in forums, including in particular the Africa Top Level Domains. We are a member for that Association of African Country Code Top Level Domains. And then we also started participating actively at ICANN, especially the CCNSO, the Country Code Name Supporting Organization, which is where all the country codes gather under ICANN. And at this point, one must say, I think we may have mentioned it the last time we're here, that we are hosting the ICANN conference starting this next week, Monday, in Sentin. It's ICANN 59. It's a policy conference. It doesn't go too much on the technical side and so forth. It's running all until Thursday. And Parliament scheduled permitting will strongly encourage and request the committee members to attend if it's possible. The other stuff really does not matter much. Let's skip that, some of the activities we did. The next slide I would like to read to skip as well. It goes back to the consultation process, but it was about the outcome of the public discussion document where the consultative then did the wrap-up of the submissions and made clear recommendations and so forth. In 2007, the next slide, entitled 2007 Strategy and Policy Clarity, we released, based on the feedback that we had released from the discussion document, We released what was called the draft .za policy and procedures, and we released it for public comment. We're now making a bit more definitive statements there to say the public discussion document submissions showed the following, therefore we would like to do the following. And that's where the issue of the central registry came to the fore. And based on the feedback that we received there, there was still a very clear support for that as well. And one of the firm, I remember, submissions that came from ISPA, the SP Association, and Uniforum, was that this policy document is good, but now the Act requires you to license. So when are we getting to licensing? So we had to move from this to licensing. It was in 2007 as well that during a budget vote speech, well around May as it tends to happen, that the then Minister of Communications, the late Honorable Dr. Ivy Matsepe Kasaburi, based on following these consultations with the industry, made a directive as part of a budget vote speech to say that ZEDNA should therefore look at establishing what at the time she called a single registry for second level domains. It became popular known as a central registry though. And that allowed us now to start more earnest engagements with the industry in terms of the model now, no longer asking whether or not we should do it, but what was the best model? How far does ZEDNA go in this central registry? There were conflicting views, there were different views. Some felt that, no, what ZEDNA should do as part of the central registry is that all of the ISPs should pay to you the domain name registration fees, but the technical operations you can outsource. You don't have to develop that, very sophisticated technical skills that will see you hire, maybe 5 and over time, maybe 20 IT practitioners at a significant cost. You can outsource that. You can retain the billing, you can retain this. Others will say, no, don't even get on the billing. Appoint somebody to do that, set the price. Set the price that if you appoint Uniforum, set the price that Uniforum will charge the ISP to register names, But don't set the price for what the ISP can charge people on the street. Now, which was a fair comment, because the Act does not envisage us setting prices of what ISPs can charge people on the street. It only envisages us charging prices of what Uniforum or the central register will charge our internet service providers. So those were the dynamics that we had in place, but we're becoming more and more clear that people wanted this central registry model. We will come to the eventual look of it, but in probably say it beforehand that the eventual model that got most support, not just from the industry, we also went out to do a thorough analysis and consulted also internationally, was that there was the one of setting up a central registry where billing and technical operations and so forth sit there so that we can really focus purely on regulation. And then we can charge per domain name fees, but we don't have to be the one who administer them. It's a matter of once a month, the operator of the central registry paying us says, I registered 100 names, and your portion is X, therefore here's your X payment for the last month. In 2007, again, also there were the significant milestone. That's when the minister promulgated the .za ADR regulations, the alternative dispute resolutions. I referred to them when he spoke about the mandate that Section 69 required the minister to do that, so that was done. And it had its very important impact because we had a growing number of disputes over domain names, and people now could use these regulations to have their disputes resolved within a period of 60 to 90 days, which is much faster than going to court. It was in 2007, as I said earlier on, that the minister appointed another board and appointed new members, but not all of them were new. Some of them continued. Again, continuing with the lessons learned from our consultation, we claimed there was an absence or lack of DNS practitioners of color. There was also a lack of leadership on the continent. We felt that from a strategic point of view, it was important that we sort out these dynamics and thoughts that is so that we can influence how domain name industry looks in the continent. The feeling was that from the submission of 2007 that the central registry should not be a commercial operator, but should be a non-profit so that we'll be able to address all these issues and opportunities that we will see. One of the key things also in 2007 that faced us was the possibility, because there were some views, I think I may be wrong, I may be right, I'm trying, but I think it was Internet Society, ISOC, who at the time were calling for ZEDNA itself to consider being the central registry operator. you know, say, why don't you just operate the whole thing, license registries? Of course, that didn't fly. It says license registries and registrars, you know, but it was one of the key discussions that we had. In 2008, that's when the board made it clear that we're not keen to operate the central registry. I mean, we're not keen on a commercial central registry operator. When somebody, we can always deal with who can reinvest funds to the development of the domain name community. But also one of the key drivers of this was obviously trying to keep access to internet services as affordable as possible. One of the key principles as well is that the central registry business model must generate human capital that promotes diversity and transform the industry. But the reality was, no matter how you cut it, the only local operator that had potential to play this role was Uniforum. Of course, at the time, with all these governance weaknesses that one would have to work with. In our consultations back with the minister, we tested the issue of options, because there was a feeling that if you pick Uniforum alone, what about others? Why is there not a competition? No, but so we said clearly, our view of the central regions to the standards and so forth is that there's only one player that is likely to meet that in the local. And we also go international, and the feeling at the time of the ministry was, no, it's our internet, you know, it must be operated here. Try and work with Uniforum and build and operate the central registry. 2008, we started with licensing now to develop license regulation, including regulations that would license the central registry itself. We released them for public comment, and thereafter we fine-tuned them based on the comments that we received, and then we submitted, we then started engaging the department, who then assisted us with a view of saying, look, these being sophisticated regulations, before you go way too far, can we test them with the state law advisor? And when we took them to the state law advisor, that's when, if you want to call them problems started with licensing. The state law advisor looked at all precedent in matters of licensing decisions in court and so forth, and came to firm conclusions that, one, only the minister could make regulations that are anticipated in Section 64 and 65. And that ZEDNA can only make Section 68 regulations, but we cannot make Section 68 regulations without first having the Section 64, 65 regulations, what are called earlier on the primary regulations. One disappointment also from the feedback of the state law advisor was that our regulations set like how the duration of licenses, like any regulator, you know, you would want to investigate compliance. If you see that there was incompliance, then you want to suspend or to investigate and even revoke licenses to ensure that there's compliance. But the state law advisor said, this particular act does not give you those powers. It does not give you, it does not give the minister to. And then, of course, they gave us an opinion on this point of whether ZEDNA could be a central registry operator, and they said clearly, no, the act is clear, you can't do that. Now, we also had our own independent counsel opinion about this matter, of whether ZEDNA could operate the central registry, and the opinion supported the state law advisor as well to say, no, you can't be a referent player. It becomes a complication. You will have to amend the ECT Act. The point of making this independent legal opinion should, so that it doesn't sound like it's the board back then, we're adamant to try to achieve this. There was, as I said, some players were strongly feeling that, no, ZEDNA should be the central operator. Not everybody was too happy, for example, with how Uniforum was doing business. So there were some of the SPs who were saying, no, maybe ZEDNA should be the one who does this. But we laid it to rest with those legal opinions that came. And one of the developments in 2008, while we were dealing with this at the ICANN level, was that ICANN then announced that we want to start accepting new top-level domains in a few years' time. So we're starting policy consultations. That was in an ICANN Paris conference in 2008. And why one mentions this in this vein is that that announcement that was going to affect the industry started to become a certain environmental driver for us to wrap up our changes as fast as possible. Because if we didn't, then these top-level domains could enter the market when .za store is not clear and come here and sell their domains at the expense of .za. We also appreciated that if we could wrap up the central registry sooner, we could also have a possibility of the central registry participating in this new top-level domain program of ICANN, because our goal was to have the central registry playing an influential and leadership role in Africa. 2009, we tried with the department again to finalize our licensing regulations now based on the state law advisor to say, okay, these are the minister's regulations, you know. We also started our central register engagement with Uniforum, because that's when it was becoming clear with the minister's view at the time that, you know, you have to find a local operator. It's our resource. You don't know, you shouldn't take it out of South Africa. So we started engaging with Uniforum as well in 2009, more earnestly. But it was really clear that there was mistrust and a know-it-all attitude. I must say, the time I was living through this thing, it was a very dismissive attitude from Uniforum back then. You know, anything you said, no, you're wrong. No, you don't know what you're talking about, you know. So, as you know, in any negotiation, even if I don't know, you don't have to tell me straight to my face, I don't know, you know. So that became a bit of a serious challenge in trying to, and back then, that was, eventually we had to try and massage this with, by removing at least the everybody from the Uniforum board and call the HR person, and then the person was their general manager at the time. And on the Zedna side, we did the same. It was myself and then the chairperson of the board, Dr. Ashmo Gaja. And we had to sit in one meeting. It might have been here in Cape Town after a budget, but I can't remember. But we had a very honest discussion to say to Uniforum, you are adopting a very disturbing attitude, and you may just force us to go out of the country. And as much as the government is not in support, we may just have to go and motivate that, you know. So that in itself at least started to tone them down to accept that we were a reality and they needed to work with us. One of the things we allowed them also was to accredit registrars back then, even before the central register. And the reason for this was that since we didn't have the licensing regulations at the time, there were all these legal dynamics between ISPs and Uniforum, and they were coming to us. You know, some of the ISPs were saying, you are the authority, why are you not intervening in this and put Uniforum in place? And Uniforum would say, well, you haven't licensed us, you don't really have authority to tell us what to do. You know, so we eventually had a compromise with Uniforum, and we said, you accredit registrars, you send to us your accreditation process, we approve it, and you stop being registering names yourself, because they were still doing it themselves from time to time. So then you stop doing that so that it's clear, and then you treat everybody equally. So that's what helped at the time as a stopgap measure to remove all these legal programs. We assumed the operation of net.za and web.za. We reviewed the SLDs, all the second-level domains, because some of them were really not justifiable to be there under .za. And that resulted, after consultation with the industry, in a deletion of, I think, 13 stale second-level domains, including like your Olivetti.za and so forth. And we now remained with, I think, around 15 second-level domains that we knew were all active. We rolled out our awareness campaign and our market survey for the first time in late 2009. And then in 2010, we released the outcomes of the market survey. In 2010, based on the regulations that we redrafted in 2009 with the department to the state law advisor as well, we released those regulations for public comment. And without going to the next slide, but we also were not successful, one must say. We still got the same feedback that said neither us nor government had those powers to police these guys this way. We started taking hard stands against Uniforum at that time because they were still playing games in the central registry negotiations. And tactic obviously wanted to use was to send a message that says, if you are not cooperating, we can go to an international player and do this on our own. We can even license you to run so.za, but we'll run everything else. But that helped to make them realize that, no, we were serious and they needed to work with us. The market survey that we ran in 2010 showed some key outcomes at the time. We're moving beyond just dealing with ISPs. We wanted to involve the public, we wanted to involve business in these matters. And then there was support for introducing second-level domains. I mean, there was not a strong support for introducing new second-level domains. People were feeling that for business, CO2 is doing well, there's still space for growth, so why introduce new second-level domains? But the calls for ease and speed of registration through automated registration processes was very clear. That fourth bullet point, the second bullet point from the bottom core was much stronger, so it meant to say CO2 was much stronger and more affordable than .com in South Africa and so forth. I would like to skip this slide. It's all the detail of the work that we did, and I'll move to the next one. In 2011, more focus on central registry. After we hired a consultant to help us with the model of the central registry, we then were able to now negotiate more energy within the forum. We are now more privy to how the registry operations were being done. We had undertaken studies. We had involved many people. I remember at some point we contracted OZ Registry, who were operating .au in Australia, to help us with the model and so forth and to give us key points in our negotiations within the forum. And that negotiation that started NS in 2011 saw us now concluding what was called back then Heads of Agreement concerning the Central Registry. And in this Heads of Agreement, Uniforum directors were to accept ZNet directors to an interim board of Uniforum. This was supposed to be maybe a maximum, we said at the time, a maximum 2 years, so that this interim board that has equal ZNet directors and equal Uniforum directors could be the one that tried the establishment or the conversion of Uniforum to a Central Registry. So that was done. Uniforum at the time was spending substantial amounts, investing, if you want to put it that way, on what is called COSA CARES, a foundation that did good works, on IT, some be it teacher training in schools and so forth. And the agreement, the part of this heads of agreement was that entity will be separated, as it was not the core function of Uniforum. And then, of course, Uniforum will be transitioned to a central registry. Now, that was a policy that we did in 2011 as well, what was called the Domain Name Registration and Management Policy, which eventually became effective in 2015 under the name of General Policy. We had different work that we did, like on org.za and so forth. But the key thing in 2011 was that while we're at the early stage of the central registry negotiations, having concluded the heads of agreement, Uniforum had been developing what we call an APP system. APP is a standard that for automation of domain name registration. And when they had been working on this system, I think from early 2010, they developed it in-house. We felt that it was a good move because it's a local system. And two, it was at the level that ICANN requires for the registry operations. Why that was important for us was we felt we could also use the central registry to apply for generic top-level domains that are of interest to South Africa. And that the deployment of that system had a very good benefit. I remember when they deployed it in 2011, they came and said, look, now the cost of operating the interaction with the registrars have significantly dropped, which is automated. You no longer have to deal with emails and confirm things and deal with with hard copy forms, process scan. It's now all automated. They said, we feel that we can drop the price from 50 rands per name to 35 rands, something, but it goes on to with VAT, it went to 39, which we felt was a very good move, and it was well received by both government and internet community when we published that. Still on 2011, that's when the GTLDs, ICANN GTLDs came to the fore, and we're trying to work out with the forum to conclude the central registry part. And it became clear at the time that people were very interested in acquiring .Africa, but they were all non-African entities. And we started various maneuvers then. Different entities came to the fore, so I won't go into detail to that. But it was all fun and games. But it all culminated to what we have now today, that ZACR is the operator of .Africa. Still, during this ICANN new GTLDs revolution, we are the first city to contact us was the city of Cape Town. I've forgotten the guy's name. It was the city open then. Because he had been approached by two entities, one from Europe called CORE, which stands for Council of Registrars, and also approached, I think it's possible, I'm not too sure, I can't remember, it might have been VeriSign, Wuran.com or affiliates, were all saying, no, we'll just appear at Cape Town for you. And they contacted us, luckily because I had met the guy the year before in an iWeek. So said, look, Zedna, you need to advise us here. We are being approached. We are seeing one or two benefits into this, but we do not know what the political impact of it may be. Can you please advise us? And that helped us because we then say to them, please don't accede to those requests. We are trying to have everything local being run here for the development of the industry. Devon had the same approaches as well. So we started at the time, say, with the Uniforum back then to say, guys, we need to try and protect these particular names of these three cities because there's interest. Otherwise, they will be run by people from overseas, and they will come back to compete with .za. They will rather compete with .za locally being run by local operators, because where they registered .jobek or .za, it's still money that's circulating here, and it goes to a non-profit entity that we can invest it there. So we had the support of the Department of Communications after we consulted with them to say, please, guys, Zedna, do all you can to protect these three cities, Cape Town, Joburg, and Durban, and launch new spaces for that, which in itself was a significant push for us to conclude the central registry model, because we couldn't do that without the central registry. South Africa also was heating up. On the next slide, we had clear interest in South Africa, and we worked very hard to convince the African Union to say, look, we are African, you know. Not only are we only African for South Africa, we also have an African solution, you know. Why take South Africa to, you know, other players out there when we are here, you know. And obviously a lot of lobbying, no matter how you can cut it, we had to have a lot of lobbying here, talk to African representatives of African governments. With the assistance, great assistance with the Department of Communications back then, to say to the African Union Commission, please, we are ready as and when. They ran an open tender process, obviously. Why they came to the fore when it's ICANN that delegates this thing? Well, that ICANN had a simple policy. They said, if you apply for a generic top-level domain of a place name, the government of that country where that place name is the one that must endorse and support. If it doesn't, you won't get it, you know. So hence we then went to the African Union, was .Africa, in terms of the ICANN policy, Africa being a continental name, the real custodian of Africa can't be a single government, but the Association of Governments in Africa. So the AUC were the ones who were to endorse. So they're in an open process in 2011 to say, look, whoever's interested to obtain our endorsement, apply. And we applied with the support of the industry, African Internet community. Why? Because the community accepted that currently only South Africa was ready to meet ICANN requirements, both technically in terms of infrastructure and also the funding requirements. The money that were involved in this was significant, and we'll cover it next time. So, but we got a go-ahead from the department then to use the central registry to apply for the three cities of South Africa. In 2012, that's when the application period, the real application period at ICANN started for these GTLDs. The ACR applied for Cape Town, Durban, Joburg, and .Africa. And each application costed at the time $185,000. The rate of exchange back then was that $1 was equal to a little more than 10 rands. So that amounted to around 1.8 million rands. How did Uniforum, now, was that's when they were changed to the central registry, apply for this? They had funds that amassed over years, surplus funds that they had amassed over years. So we said to them, we support your use for this because it builds our local internet industry. So they applied to that. We then concluded our central registry negotiations with Uniforum in November 2012. That's when now Uniforum became the very central registry. Not only were they going to operate CO.ZA, they were Net.ZA, Org.ZA, and Web.ZA as well. We've also over time added Law.ZA as well. We had the transition of an interim board, where three Zedna directors back then joined the Uniforum board. So you had three old Uniforum directors and three Zedna directors and then one independent chair, Mr. Llewellyn Jones, who I think until, I don't know if he stepped on, but I know last year he wanted to step on, but he's been the one who was providing the chairperson, was playing the chairperson role in that board. The central registry agreement then allowed us for the first time to now receive domain name fees, because we now had this agreement, instead of licensing, because we had failed on licensing. Came clear with the state law advisor that you can't license on this basis. We strongly advise you, do it differently with industry support until this act is amended. So that's how we came to this agreement with the Uniforum. We started to be self-funding in 2011. Exciting times. The next slide was obviously there were several things. We had GTLD applications that was accepted by ICANN. South Africa was more challenging, obviously, because they were competing with us there. we had Network City and so forth charters because we are opening them up for public to register names in there. The number of accredited registrars in the ECR, which started in when it was in a forum, had now exceeded 300. The names had exceeded 800,000. We hosted the ICANN 47 conference in Durban in 2013. I'll skip the next slide, but that's when the dot cities became a reality in 2014. We launched them with great interest, but South Africa couldn't be launched because there were legal issues and wrangles between the competing bidders and ICANN. Next slide on exciting times continue. That's when our general policy as well was released for public comment. It became effective in 2015. The minister gazetted the call for the extension of ADR regulations. We wanted to include NetZA and OXA and so forth. So those are the kids. I won't go through all of them, Chair, in the interest of time. I think I've already started. I think the next slide that says concerning signs image, probably it's one that one can touch on in the last few minutes to say. We, as much as the Central Registry Project had been a success in terms of being established and you know, being used to apply for GTLDs, .Africa, .Durban, and so forth. There were realities one we had to face. You know, there were, in how it was run, the old uniform attitude appearing, you know, and we needed to do things tighter, you know, not over them. The agreement requires them to submit reports to us, which were not submitted. Certain aspects of the operating agreement were not being implemented. There was no commitment in absorbing the registry functions from the technical operator. The dynamic here being that when we appointed Uniforum, as they said, to be the central registry, the technology, the EPP technology they were using, had been developed by the Uniforum directors in their private capacity, you know. So they developed it in their private capacity as a separate company. And without waiting for the conclusion of the operating agreement, they contracted their company to provide the service. So that by the time we appointed them to be the central registry operator, they already had a standing five-year agreement that started earlier than the operating agreement. Now, in the operating agreement, we're clear to say these technical functions are supposed to be played by Uniforum. You may, if you so desire, Uniforum appoint, outsource some of these aspects, but the expectation is that you are the registry. You know, so the reality is that we start realizing that, wait, guys, we've appointed you, but everything sits with those guys in their private capacity, which means this is now defeating the purpose of this. You have no IT person, for example. All the IT services are sitting there. So our expectation is that you start at least to, you know, employ people who can take over that particular function. We also had an issue of the dot cities role, where once the dot Durban, Cape Town, and Joburg were now up and running, with us having endorsed the application, you know, and saying that, look, we'll have oversight. Then there were now dynamics. There was changing leadership there as well. And before I'm saying, oh, no, that, now there's nothing in law that says you have a role over this, which was really painful to want to say. It had been said, now went to government to persuade government to say, can you please support this? And government said, you're the domain regulator, our entity. Okay, you can endorse. So we endorse. And now we're told, no, you don't have a role in this. There's no law that says we will run these three cities the way we see fit, and you won't get a sign from it. You know, we would have loved to get a sign to this, but we don't know, you won't get a sign. It's still the reality up to today. We also started seeing when we, because now we're analyzing their business plan, their budget, as part of their accountability to us, that they continue to spend on social responsibility projects such as COSA Cares. We saw their staffing costs also shooting up, you know, significantly in a way that was also concerning. And such things as you know, increased travel to ICANN meetings and so forth. The question of the board back then was, what are you doing at ICANN? Because we are the interface with ICANN. And we're not saying don't go to ICANN, but it's such a significant cost, you know. So the reality was that the DOTA funding were being used a lot to finance the DOTA Africa project, you know. And our complaint was, but we didn't appoint you for that. Yes, we can spend, but we feel we can be reasonable. So that's why the dynamics started and so forth. The next slide was then, of course, another dynamic that one had to admit that was probably not working very well was when the interim board was done to transition the Forum Central Registry, three directors from ZNA to join an interim board with three former Uniforum directors, you know, and the idea was that
do this for 2 years, then all of you disappear. But we started seeing disturbing patterns where some of the directors, you know, no longer were stepping down. You know, and when the new board was established, I mean, the current board was appointed in 2015, one of the dynamics they had to deal with that was that, of course, to say, okay, so do we have any role we play in ZACR? So we gave them the history. And there was concern when people found out that some of the now former Zedna directors were still sitting there, you know. But the question was, but you weren't there on Zedna's mandate. It was only for 2 years. Why are you continuing now beyond when you are no longer Zedna director? That's one. Two, there's no longer a need anyway. You know, the former and former directors have stepped down as well. You know, so why are you still there? So, but that then started to raise issues of autonomy. You know, where we're told that no, ZACR is an autonomous entity; it has a right to appoint directors as it wishes. But the reality of Uniforum directors, former directors, appointing themselves as contractors to ZACR was we still live with it today, and it's one of the key things that drives the issues of fees. And this background change is important because the issue of the current ZACR fee dispute is born out of this. It's born from the reality where Zedna says, we get 7 rands per domain name, say 1.2 million names, that's worth around 8 point something million rands now. We have an X number of activities in the ECTA that we're supposed to do. We barely can carry them over. We have 3 or 4 staff members. We need to significantly improve, you know. So we did our costing exercise, our planning and exercise and modeling in 2015 to say, what do we need to achieve everything that the ECTA says we must do, you know. So we went through that exercise through a press spreadsheet using our finance people and so forth. And then the board came to a point of saying, okay, if you want to run this type of awareness campaign that covers radio, TV, print, online, you'll need 1, 2, or 3 heads. If you want to then really do the police and compliance function, you need an X number of heads. And then assuming, because we have the salary benchmarks are there, Deloitte does them every year, ITWeb does them every year, so we start to cost all this and say, if you get a well-experienced, not high level, but in the middle, experienced type of a manager for this function, how much does it cost you? So we came up with the whole budget. You know, and then we said, okay, based on this then, how much do we need? And that was clear. And based on that, we started saying, if then we need how this, what is the pay domain name fee that can give us this particular budget? That's when the exercise showed that it was 16 rands, 63 cents per domain name. You know, so the board said, okay, that's what we will need for us to at least do our ECTA mandate reasonably. Yes. And based on that, obviously the key thing in the operating agreement says, in us reviewing fees, we must be cautious that, because there was always anticipation that at some point we'll increase them, but we must be cautious that it doesn't then decapacitate ZACR from performing its function. You know, so the operating agreement has a clear consultation period that says, Zedna on fees, because that's what the ECTA doesn't anticipate, on fees that we pay you, that ZACR pays that Zedna, or on fees that ZACR charges registrars, Zedna will have an exclusive decision-making authority. But it will be done in consultation with the affected parties. So in late 2014, at the edging of ZACR, for example, we moved now from 35 rands per registrar fee back to 45 at their request. We ran a consultation with the ISP community, we held workshops, and then we found out that there was substantial support for us to increase that fee. Now, when it came to our fee, the interested party is the ZACR itself. So we ran that consultation that says, look, here is our costing exercise, this is how much we need. Obviously, we knew they would bargain, it's their right, you know. So we said, the board said, okay, it's 1663, but if we don't get 1663, what's the minimum can we take? And then the modeling exercise, that 13 rands 50 at least. That, of course, means you'll chop out some of activities. Instead of maybe communications and awareness team of 4, you'll really have 1 or 2. You know. So we said, what's the base minimum we can? It's this. What is the base minimum fee? Then it says 13 rands 50. So we took that to ZACR as part of the consultation. We sent them a note on the 25th of September 2015 to say, we want to review the fee, we want to increase it. We give you a 20 days notice. It's all in the agreement. So we met in late October, and we tabled our proposal to them to say, this is what our board has approved. We want to hear from you. And we ran that consultation. We went back and forth with them. Unfortunately, one must also admit that there was There was just clearly no seriousness in it, you know. You come to a meeting, you say, we need your proposal, guys, or we need a detailed exercise that shows how this will affect you. What's the minimum, what's the maximum you can afford to give us? You get to the meeting, it's not been done, you know. So all the way from September to February, the 24th, we're still dealing with this issue. There's never been a formal single proposal from ZSR that says, we can afford 10 rands, you know, 12. You know, or we can afford this amount of money. How about maybe we work over years, you know, this way? There was nothing. Some of the scenarios that were tabled in our meetings, they would be tabled at the meeting, and then we say, okay, guys, we are not comfortable with this, but hey, I'm not the board, because we had a team of three Zetna directors and myself and Peter. Said, okay, we are not the whole board. We will take this to our board to consider. They said, you'll be told, no, don't take anything here. We're just showing you. It's not been approved by our board. So we had to put an end to this. We analyzed their financials that they presented before us in detail, Chen. And we came to a point that they clearly could not defend themselves. Because we said to them, all the registry functions that we appointed you to perform, except billing, all the registry functions are sitting with these former directors of yours in their private capacity. They are charging 18 rands 50 per name to provide them, you know. And we are all in the same building, as you would remember. We're in the same building. They are providing, charging 18 rands 50 per name to provide these services. Now, the key question is then, what then drives your expenditure? Because this is the core function we appointed you to provide. And it's costing us so much, 18 rands 50 per name. And we can see this company is particularly growing. It has developers, there's techies, they are happy with the fee. What then justifies you to take well around 15 or 17 rands per domain name? What are you doing? And that exercise showed that, one, there was a clear duplication of what we do. We had agreed in that agreement, it says so, that Zetna's functions in the ECT Act, in addition to them, they are untouchable. Zetna must do the following. So why are you saying awareness and marketing and all that stuff, you know? So our summation of our analysis with them as well, that they couldn't defend, was that your costs are not really driven by .za. They are driven by .africa. And the problem with .africa is that when you receive all your money back with interest, we won't have a share on that. So what basis do we have then to say to you, we must be held back from performing our mandate to allow you to run .africa, you know? So as a result of that, we then said to them, look, both time was lapsing. We'd given them two notices to say, we want this wrapped up by this time. This time came, there was no firm proposals. Second time it happened, then in February, our board said, we'll give them a final extension, which was a letter we sent them, and we said, we give you until the 22nd of February to give you a formal proposal or counter proposal. Otherwise, based on all the engagements we've had with you, we will then now make our own minds and say this is the right fee. So our analysis and our exercise, when we looked at all their fees, we decided, let us not cripple them from doing marketing, but hey, this was really extravagant, you know, because they provided a list of their functions on marketing, the activities, and they said, but what are you doing in all these things? That's Zetna's function. So it was clear duplication, and based on that, we said, we went back to our board to say, look, we feel that 13 rands 50 is affordable. They can, but maybe let's start at 12. So that they cannot say we cripple them, they're no longer be able to go to ICANN, they're no longer able to do this. So that's how, Chair, we came to this fee thing. And obviously, once we made that determination, there were then a whole lot of funny games that started to come to the fore, media approaching us. We hear that you are significantly raising the cost of the internet in South Africa. You know, and we dispel all those things to say, but who are you talking to? And who is misinforming you? Because we are only increasing the fee that the razor pays us, not the fee that they charge registrars. That stays the same, you know. So there was a lot of misinformation that started. Our AGM became very militant, you know, when some people came and felt that Zetna were not justified to do this, these fees unfair, and so forth and so forth. But that's where we came to where we are on this matter. I will not say more, because the dispute is settled for arbitration on the 10th to the 14th of July. I think, Chair, the rest really can then be read separately. This should be it.
much for the presentation. I think members won't enter too much into the history and focus more on the functioning of Lord Zetna if they are still executing their mandate as required, and also what we see as weaknesses or challenges and how Lord Zetna intends correcting that moving forward. I think the history, members and other stakeholders will read at their own time. But if you get into that history and there's something you want to raise, there's nothing wrong, we can talk to that. So this is here to respond. And in my opening remarks, I said it's not the first time engaged with Rosetta, like other members have alluded to, that from the presentation, we'll hear what is new and entertain that. And if there is nothing new, Rosetta will highlight issues they think are very important to bring to the attention of the committee. Maybe issues that they want to put emphasis on, then we take it from there. And I'm glad that you decided to skip other areas where you think it's not very much important for today's engagement. And however, even if members feel that there's nothing new, but I think there is something that you can talk to say improve here going forward, and maybe also put the time frame as we usually do, that when we ask for a corrective measure in other areas, we give the full time frame to improve. And I think ultimately, whatever questions are going to be asked for input that will be put forth or criticisms, it will be constructive with a good intention of building our relationship and make sure that we do things today better than yesterday. Members here, the presentation, can we talk to it? Thank you. Again, Honorable Sheen, Honorable Polno.
Chairperson, I must say, having gone through the history, it's clear that this is a little child born out of wedlock. And there's a lot of problems surrounding who's the parent and who must accept responsibility, and I mean, really, it's a painful history. The question now is there a role for them going forward? How do they see their new role as a regulator in terms of what is stipulated in the white paper, ICT in the white paper. Second point is, I don't know, but Chairperson, sometimes we have a difficulty that once you start deviating from your core mandate, which was in Chapter 10 of the ECA Act, if you start on the wrong foot, matters just become increasingly difficult. You entangle yourself into all sorts of drama. And, from having listened, it really seemed like it was a very nice vehicle to have international exposure and to meet and greet and conference and consultations, etc. But the core mandate, if you sell the family jewel, what your core mandate is, if you allow other entities to take over your primary function, why do you exist? Why do you exist? So my concern is, and remember, Chair, in earlier presentations when it was budget time, etc., we posed questions about new empires being built and staff expenditure, staff structures, and we said, but what is it that you really need? If you outsource certain functions, why do you need to build more people? And then in the end, go to government and say, well, we now need money because we're actually doing this for South Africa. So I want to say this whole history is fascinating and it explains why it actually did not step into the function that it was originally intended to perform. And then a lot of personality clashes, etc., and all of that came into the mix. But now the question is, what do you do Do we need you? How do you see your role in the new sort of structure that is envisaged for the sector? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Mpisane, thank you very much for a very detailed presentation on the history and all the conflicts. And I think that, there was a lot of opposition to government actually getting involved in issues of managing the internet. But, you know, be that as it may, the Act exists and we have to make the best of it that we can. But to me, that the problem now is, and I know that you have a good working relationship with most of the ISP community. So you are actually listening to their voices, which I think is very good. My problem now comes that who pulls your strings? If it comes to a conflict between the ISP community and the government, whose voice do you listen to? Because they pay you to work in their interests, but yet you report to the government. So if there's a conflict, where does your loyalty lie? Where does your gut lie? And I think in particular and it hasn't happened here yet, but increasingly in Africa, governments are shutting down the internet. Who would you lobby for in that situation? Would you lobby to keep the internet open, which is part of the constitutional mandate? Or would you listen to a government directive on that? I'm wanting to know, you often talk about the economic and commercial benefits of having a COZA registration. What is that economic benefit? Have you actually researched it? Is there an economic benefit? Is it just a nice to have for, I think I said this last time, sort of patriotic, heartwarming stuff? Because, you know, I don't see the tremendous amount of money to be made out of, you know, registering domain names. Maybe I'm wrong. But I'm told that it is a door opener for emerging businesses that say, hey, you know, we'll do your registration and then we'll develop your website and then, you know, we'll grow our business with you. I'd like to know what your commercial justification is. Going back onto internet shutdowns, do you have a view on the proposal that wasn't accepted by AfriNIC about the measures, I don't know if you're aware of this, measures to punish governments who shut down the internet. There was much, much online discussion about it, but it wasn't accepted at the conference in the end. What would your position be on that? And do you have the capacity to advise government on matters of internet governance? Who are your researchers? How much research do you go to government with the sector's views on internet governance, or do their own thing? Also, your board representation. I know when you first started, I was amused to see that you had four white males hyphen geeks. And then you had, I think, three black females and one black male. Now, I presume the black female and the black male weren't geeks. Has anything changed? Because, see, I think you only have one white male left on your board. Can you give us some kind of breakdown of their capabilities? Obviously, a board doesn't need to be all technical, but I'd like to know who those are. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. As you know, I'm a new member, and I have not seen any financial statements of SATNA. You know, is that possible, if that was not in front of the committee, whether we can have maybe a copy of that and just to see, you know, how you're functioning, what is your bonuses, what is your salary payouts, and, you know, how do you spend your money? It is unfortunately a very unnecessary history. You know, really, we're talking now 18 years, or is it 15 years, 16 years? And it's a long time, and you know, many things has happened in this industry over that time. Now, in terms of the new white paper, white paper says that all domain name registry functions currently performed by ZACR must now go to the domain name regulator, and that will be part of the integrated ICT regulator. Where will you fit in that? If you can just explain that to me, please.
Thank you, Chair. The presentation highlighted the Act established ZDOTNA as a non-profit company with a membership base where every SA citizen can become member. Here is the complication about whether or not ZDOTNA is a PFMA entity. What is the current position with this regard to this position? Number two, does the organogram as outlined in the presentation take into consideration the new position, budgeted position for the 2017-18 financial year? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Just one question to add. I think the one of the budget and the organogram has been emphasized by two members. Just to check that you have alluded to the fact that you have outsourced because you didn't have a ready...
I think I don't have a
question.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take them the questions as they were presented. There is a, I think there's an overlap in the question that Member Killian asked about the role of ZDNA going forward in view of the white paper with my apologies, Chair, humble apologies. I didn't get the member's surname.
Kornoff.
Oh, okay, okay. That Mr. Kornoff also asked about the white paper, so let us address it first. The white paper and... somehow intentionally left it out in my presentation, but in any case, I thought it will come out nicely in the discussion. The white paper in itself advocates for integration of the current regulatory structures, and that's a determination in the policy that one cannot challenge but accept. So the question of our role going forward is... will be as the white paper says it. It will be. What does the white paper say it will be? It says there will be an integrated regulator, or they call it economic regulator, as a way, that takes the functions, any regulatory function of USASA, of ZDNA, and suppose of the CASA as well, and into this new regulator that will be established. As far as I know, knowing the department's plans, I think they have a target for that. To draft a bill for the integration of that entity. Now, jump forward, whether it takes a year or less than a year or it takes 2 years or three, the whole point is this: once that bill is done, it becomes an act of parliament, then you will no longer have ZDNA, as much as you will no longer have USASA. And I don't know about ICASA, I don't say, Lord, they fall in the other ministry, you know. So that's the reality that we'll have to deal with. Whether or not that the is a good thing or a bad thing, was it also brings in a wrong way, maybe it brings a question of loyalty. But I'll come to that question later. But thank God we've never been put to that situation. But the reality is that we will cease to exist. The function that we do, Honorable Member Kornoff put it well. The policy says two things of integration. Whatever registry functions of that ZACR or anybody else is playing, they will be absorbed by this new economy or integrated regulator. That's one. Two. And it says will be integrated by the domain name regulator. But it goes on to say that because if you stop there and say, oh, that's not good, we've sorted out your problems with ZACR. We take everything they do, we do it ourselves.
sorry, but the policy goes on to say, and UZNS will be integrated into this regulator. You know, so the reality that will cease to exist, the function will not cease to exist. The function has been was done before ZN was established by Uninet, led by Mike Lowry. And we'll come to our economic benefits function. But the key thing, for example, from a strategy point of view, we've always understood that when we create awareness about domain names, I've had Peter can attest, I've had to say to our guys sometimes when we contract consultants, we'll say, no. It's not ZN awareness you are making. It's dot ZA awareness. Because I've always been concerned that if you make ZN awareness and then times like this come and ZN ceases to exist, people who are equating dot ZA with ZN will think ZA is dead. You know, so no, ZA will continue to exist. I think even in this scheme of the integrated regulator, that shouldn't be a problem, including operating the registries. There are models. It depends on what model you pursue. You know, there are models in other countries where, yes, such an integrated regulator, such a regulator also provides these registry functions itself, or it outsources them, just through a contract instead of a licensing. It's all, for me, is workable, but yes, will cease to exist. Deviating from the ECTX mandate, sorry, going back, yes, I agree that the shortcomings, I remember Killian, in the ECTX that caused the state advisor to say, please don't implement this, it's going to come back to haunt you. We've had to live with them up to today. You know, if we had a clear licensing framework in place, some of the problems would have been eliminated. Sorry. Sorry, my throat is really, really shows I'm a pirate's friend. So yes, that was the cause of the problem, but of course the way forward that the white paper now has should help us to eliminate. Now, honorable member, Shin, your question about conflict between government and ISPs. Yeah, no, I think the key thing has been that, thankfully, it has never happened. You know, I cannot tell the future. I will never say the basis why our government will try and shut down the internet, for example. But assume something like that, an extreme, were to happen, there will be at least one good thing. There will be only one celebration I would have in my heart. I won't be there at that time. You know, so it won't be me who will have to run and say, where would I listen to? You know. But no, in terms of this, we've never been in a situation where we were torn. But there's been small things where sometimes, for example, our budgets, you know, some of the members were feeling, as you would know, some of the members were feeling, yeah, but this fee increase, you could do it differently, you know, others and so forth. But those are like any organization, you know, eventually they vote and then everybody says, okay, so we support this budget based on this, you know. We've never had anything that tears us apart between governments. Well, I think the important thing to point out, though, is that going forward, when it comes to this white paper implementation, is that there are one or two things that obviously we'll have to manage from a transitional point of view. One of them being that ZN being a member's entity, and the companies are saying an entity with members, its members are the highest decision-making authority. But the ECTX is clear that the minister is sort of super member, you know, because he appoints the board, it does this and this. So that will have to be managed to phase out the membership issues to make sure that this particular transition happens. There's also the function of then going through ICANN to ask for a delegation again. Because not the issue with ZN, if you stop ZN, ICANN says on record you still have ZN, I won't take it to anybody. So there will need to be a transitional mechanism where the ICANN processes start before ZN is dissolved and then ZN consents and then it's transferred to them. On the economic benefits of having a domain name, I think your closing question that says, is it a very attractive business, you know, in terms of revenue? Admittedly, it's not really a huge business, you know, unless you have scale like .com, at least they now, you know, see benefits. They report revenue of around $1 billion US dollars. Of course, they're sitting with around 140 million .com registrations, you know, each at a minimum costing around $9, you know. So they for them, but it's not a huge. I mean, we are talking about here, member Gordonoff, before. We will circulate our audited statements as well for you to see. We are talking about the scenario where the simple mathematics is that you have the fee that the reserve charges registrars is 45 francs per name.
Now, if you have 1.2 million names times 45, that comes to around 50 to 60 million rands. You know, so you can say it's not as big as MTN. If you want us to contribute 0. Something to Universal, to the USAF, that will come in and it's very cheap for us, you know. So it's not a, and we live within these means, by the way. We live within these means. That is our lives within these 45 friends. Many, them including their outsourced provider, they live within these 45 friends. And then we have to take our portion, you know. So it's not a very big business. But from an economic benefit point of view, there's a substantial, admittedly, a substantial patriotic tone that you take to say, hey, be online, say that you're South African. There's a little, an indirect benefit, you would argue, that is the economically to say, if you register .za and ZN is non-profit and ZSR is non-profit, it's not like we'll pay the dividend to somebody who may not be even South African, but we take whatever we have, we reinvest here, you know. So, but the reality is that people have other options to be online, we admit that. You know, when you talk in our awareness campaigns, our guys will be in Durban tomorrow on this National Small Business Council or Chamber, talking to business. But one thing that comes out, admittedly, is that there are other options out there, sometimes not even domains. Some of the businesses are able to just sell big time without a domain, without a web address, just with a Facebook page, you know. So you have all these competing interests, but the key thing is that the benefit that is there is not only money, it's about the presence of South Africa online and the identity of South Africa online and information that is that sits at least within the South African infrastructure, because whatever you do, you know, in those domain names, when you have a website, it sits within primarily .za. The African proposal against the government shutting down the internet, no, we did not respond to that. We are very focused on the, when it comes to policy functions, it's really the operational side of policies. You know, so we stay away from public policy stuff. Why? Because we're a statutory entity, and we are not assigned that function. It's a function of government. Personally, I read it, to a certain extent. I felt that, you know what, let them sort it out. Maybe it's not on my side. It appeared to me to be a very challenging proposal. You know, so I don't know how far it went as well. Do we have internet governance capacity to provide advice to government? How do we do it if we do? Now we are much better, you know. It's been a struggle, to be honest with you. It's been a struggle because when we had four people, you know, and mainly normally being me going to ICANN meetings, and you know ICANN has like multiple meetings running in parallel, you know, so it will be difficult. But what we will find out is important, we will then come back and provide to government as advice. For example, the issue of .cities or .Cape Town, .Joburg and so forth, because we felt it was profound. And at the time, the special government was particularly active within ICANN. There's Palisa, she was there, you know. So it was something that we discussed, and so what do we do? You know, government consulted us, we brought in ZSR back then, and we said, what do we do? Let's apply for it. So it was sort of a policy decision to say that. Now it's a bit better because we have staff. What we do is we prepare, like now there's an annual report we'll release on the internet governance. We haven't hired an internet governance coordinator in the process of employing one, but we outsourced the function. We contracted a service provider to develop a paper and we set parameters. That's how we provide capacity currently, but going forward in the next year, because I suspect we have only 1 year to exist. then you have a good chance to still see me. but that's how we'll be doing it. We want to have sort of some form of an annual report where we highlight these things and then we push it to government and stakeholders to say, we think these are things that are important to South Africa. Then let the stakeholders decide how they want to handle it. We participate in the internet governance, the local one. You know, it's been done mainly in the recent past, the department with ISPA and the Gauteng Internet Society, and then ZEDNA. You know, so we participate that in facilitating it. The board breakdown, the board breakdown now, still nine, you have five women, which is a substantial break from the past. Five women in the board, and then you have four males. Only one is white, and then we have the rest are only one guy is white, and then the rest are African guys. And with women, well, there's one Indian lady is a board member. So in total, are five women for me. One is a geek. One is a geek, and we obviously government sensibly felt that, you know, as much as we make these changes, you need somebody technical, you know, and no matter how you cut it, especially for the board, it provides a very good oversight, because with staff, we sometimes get too creative and fascinated by certain things, and we say, yeah, let's go this way, you know, and then he gives that independent viewpoint to say, no, I don't think so, or I agree, but how you do it is wrong, you know. So only one geek in the board. The rest are people, mainly two lawyers, as the chairperson is an advocate, and there's another lawyer in the board. We have a finance person, you know, who recently, last week, obtained his doctorate in finance. He's now a doctor, Dr. John Ditsipa. And then we have a medical doctor stroke business person, because she has her own businesses. Then we have a psychologist in the board to help us. It doesn't insinuate that there are fights in the board, you know, but but we have a psychologist just in case, you know. Yes. And then one of the ladies as well is also, you could call a geek, but not so much in this space, you know, it's from the systems design and so forth, but she also provides a good base. That's the breakdown of the board. And one engineer, sorry, yes, so former ESCOM, as you can. So we covered the issue of honorable member Hornoff, that we'll send out our latest audited financial statement, and we've answered the issue about where do we fit in, you know. Honorable member Ndongeni, yes, that was the dynamic of membership, you know, and its impact, but we are not a PFMA entity, exactly because we are not funded from the public coffers, you know, and two, National Treasury is thinking, what is the issue of membership? And they said, your shareholder is in government, they say. You have members, you know, and you're not getting money from us. So you can't be, you know, a Schedule 3A entity. We have voluntarily submitted ourselves to, call it a high-level inspection or audit by the Auditor General, you know, in the past. They are less active now, but in the past, especially when we were receiving the seed funding from government, you know, they didn't audit us, we'll have our auditors, but they will be in touch with our auditors, and they will have a meeting, and then they will conclude things and so forth. But we are not the PFMA entity as we stand. The organogram that we have there is in terms of the roles and functions and so forth, is valid. Not all of the positions within the board have been filled, but the bulk of them have been, you know. So, but those are really divisions of Zedna, as you said. I think we still have it in the board. Namespace, finance and admin, marketing and communications, IT, operations, and policy and regulations. They are really based on our mandate, as we stand. But the whole point is, there's a bill that government is working on integrating us, and we will cease to exist in the, whether very near future or not so near future, but we will cease to exist, and you will cease to see my face.
Any follow-up questions?
Chief, just clarity. We understand where they come from. Just wanted to know, in view of what Honourable Shin has said, that sort of statutory processes very often take very long. Is there any immediate intervention that they would suggest? Because we need to know if there are certain sort of statutory, stumbling blocks or sort of problems that they are encountering on a day-to-day basis. The matter of the PFMA is also an important one you just have mentioned. I think this is more because this entity must be seen to be independent, although ICASA is getting... No, because it's not getting any money from government. But the point is, if you really consider it, the SABC has to report. It is contained in the schedules of the PFMA.
So,
very, no, license fees go to individuals. Okay, our license fees go to ICASA. But the point is, it's very limited. The important, the SABC, the important thing here is, if it is an entity that operates in the public sphere, actually, if they report to us, etc., they should be some or other list in the PFMA where these entities are listed. They may report differently to other entities, but I think it is an omission that we will have to take forward. But I was just wondering if there was any immediate type of intervention that Dr. now wanted us to follow up on. We would like to understand why they wanted to engage with us, if there's anything that we could do from our side. Thank you, Chair.
Also, I have one regarding the incorporation. I was going to ask if it has some unintended consequences, but you've already said it, you know, writing your death warrant. That, and on the other hand, you talk about, you know, two positions that are not yet filled in. Now that your lifespan is you're on the edge, do you think before you phase out, those two positions that have been filled in? And apart from that death warrant again, is there any other unintended consequences that may come with the incorporation that you may not be aware of?
Thank you, sir. Now I start with your question. It's difficult to anticipate, but I think the key thing probably that when I'm speaking for this intervention, you know, and the new
and in terms of the legalities involved in phasing out a membership entity or a member-based entity, so that will need to be thoroughly prepared for, you know, because I suspect some of the things the members may, I'm not saying it's a correct analysis, but I know that typically the companies that foresee a scenario where a dissolution of a company with members have to have members voting to agree that it's being dissolved, you know, such things. So those are the transitional part of that we need to take care of. And then the issue of taking this function of being the authority for Dr. Zeri from ICANN, there are processes that need to be followed there. And sorry, if you get maybe someone, call him or her, fanatic member challenging things before that exists, you may have some problems now when you redelegate this on file, because I can say, well, there are some objections there. But I don't think it's a transmesh. It's a matter just of managing it. It's more to say what happens first, you know, and then you can have this function within again to say now the new regulator is the one responsible, so that there are no, you know, prolonged process. Once I can suspect that there's unhappiness from the current incumbent in the case of Zen, having that function being taken over by the new entity, then it becomes a longish process, you know, where submissions and this needs to be done. We don't want to see that. We would like to have a smooth scenario, just like it happened in 2003 when Mr. Lowry handed over to Zedna, you know, after convergence of mind. There was no dispute. It was done so smoothly, you know, so that will be one. The positions, I think the positions that we have, we are on the verge of filling them in. That we advertised. The only thing that's awaiting is, because we're hosting ICANN, we have to push back the interviews, but we have the interviews, I think, for Friday next week, when ICANN ends on Thursday. You know, it's really junior positions, but key one. One of them is internet governance, as membership was alluding. And another one is project coordinator for the type of projects that we care, and then really basic admin positions. I don't think we should stop at all, you know, and these positions that have their own unique function that once we integrate into a new operator, they will find their home. Because they are really on the domain name side of things. Member Gillian asked if there's any immediate intervention before new regulators are established. Rather than the two things I mentioned about for transition, it's difficult to say what else. You know, for me, the white paper in itself, in its own way, is an intervention. to solve the problems that, as you observed, has shown such a long baggage of, you know, so I think the white paper will help in itself to remove all these problems, you know, and whatever the role of the SAR will be and so forth, that's now for the new entity to determine, you know, to the white paper. The white paper has already determined it, if you look at it, you know, so it's like a parent who came to us and said, you never stop fighting, the two of you, get out. You know, so and both we and Zeresa will soon be outside the house and leave all the food inside, you know. So the white paper is an intervention. There is an impressive thing for now I can think of, yeah.
I think we've exhausted all the questions. It's unbelievable that we now come to the end of the day. We are used to sitting, you know, in meetings long. But we know that at all times members have something to do. So it is a blessing if we finish early so we can attend to other meetings. And we're still in the preparing for the exam for permit. And, you know, they say experience is the best teacher. The only she knows that you must still be here even after 2019. Because of the processes that we go through when we have this legislation. So just cross your fingers. We also pray for you. Yeah. No, thank you very much, members, for all the questions, inputs, and advice that you are giving, you know, through your experience. And I think we should have also done some introduction. We see some new faces, unfamiliar faces. If we can quickly do that, I don't think many people here. The new faces that I'm talking about. And I assume members we are known because we are here, don't change faces every time you're here, but we have a new face there, but they have been here for some time now, and we've got enough. He's only new in the committee, but not in parliament. Can you get the introduction from the team? Then we shall then close officially our meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. So there's a V. Kampisan, the CEO of Zedna.
I'm Balisa Legoza from the Department of Children.
My name is not My name is Rosie Madlanga from the Department of Telecommunication and Social Services.
Renee Lolanga, Department of Telecommunications and Social Services.
Morning, everyone. My name is Batanda Mlambo from the Department of Telecommunications and Social Services.
Good morning. My name is Millicent Singh from the Department of Telecommunications.
My name is Solana Mutembu from the Ministry in part of the furniture.
You probably have lost it all.
Thank you.